Welcome to Books and Beyond with your hosts, Karen and Louisa. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl.
This is me, a story of who we are and where we came from. My great-great-grandmother came from a far distant place. She came on a boat with just this small case. Great-great-grandmother left her family and friends to cross the great sea to a land at the end. Her parents informed her she had no say. Tomorrow we leave for a place far away. So fill up this case with the things you love best. Sadly, you'll have to leave all the rest. What did she wear? All her clothes? Could her family album fit in this case? I know she took ribbons and some things to eat, and some shoes for when they said, take care of your feet. Her whole family tree, her pen and pencil set, one writing journal, a comb and barrette. Great-great-grandmother's necklace, her own handmade doll, that she clutched on her journey when she felt very small. How did she do it? What would you take? Would you be scared that you'd make a mistake? How would you know in the small case what to pack? And that once you left, there'd be no coming back. I think I would pack my ukulele, my St. Christopher medal to look out for me, my signed Harry Potter, my baby tooth tin, my Groucho Marx glasses, my Legos, a camera to film what I have left. In case I wonder, did this really happen? It's hard to believe. But I'd be so excited with all that was new, people and things and to meet and to do. For what you all are isn't just what you've got, but part what you learn, part what you're taught. Who you become starts with your past, family histories, and stories that last. This great tide that brought you seeds ancestors sowed, that took root inside you and helped you to grow. Kia ora, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that reading today from the children's picture book This Is Me, written by actress Jamie Lee Curtis. Karen and I thought it would be a fitting introduction to our show today on family history, didn't we, Karen?
Yes, with the Family History Expo on this weekend at the Ficklin Centre, am I right?
Yes, an annual Auckland Libraries event. So interest in family history and genealogy research has reached such new heights, Karen. You know how I love to travel. So I've just realised it's brought out a whole new trend called ancestral travel. So, you know, we're not just reading books, searching online. We're actually now travelling the world, tracking down our ancestors. So it's now a hobby I think I should take up.
Yeah, absolutely. And full of wonderful stories. This is a thing I think that surprised me. Oh, why am I saying it surprised me? It shouldn't have surprised me at all. But I think it was the variety of the kind of stories that family history investigations lead people to tell that surprised me. So I brought in this as a surprise for you. Speaking of surprises, Louisa, do you remember when we did our art show, when we did a show about books about art, and you had brought in Donald Robertson's book, The Warhol of Instagram, and I was talking about Andy Warhol. And
which I still haven't got to talk about.
I haven't got to talk about. You may yet. But I had actually been mixed up because I thought you were saying Donald that was Andy Warhol's nephew, Donald. Because he said the Warhol of Instagram. Anyway, so as it turns out, he does have a nephew. I knew that. He had a nephew who had written a book, and I just came across it at Central Library the other day. So this is another nephew. Donald is a nephew, but this is James Warhola. That was being Andy Warhol's original name before it's changed when he came over from Slovakia.
It's a children's
picture book called Uncle Andy's Cats, and it's a true story about Uncle Andy and his 25 cats who were all named Sam. And it's got these wonderful pictures. So the cat's favorite place to sleep was Uncle Andy's wig drawer. And it's got a great picture of all the cats snuggling in among Uncle Andy's wigs that look like other cats to a certain extent. And the cover, which is Uncle Andy peering over the 25 cats who are all putting up their paws and saying hello. So that was just a little something to make you realize I did appreciate your Donald Warhol that wasn't Donald Warhol book. And I can see that today you've got a book, however, I'm going to redeem myself, that I do know what it is, very well-known and acclaimed New Zealand title,
Driving to Treblinka by Diana Wichtel. I hope I got her name right there. So you know the book, Karen, because it was on our top 100 picks.
Yeah.
And so I picked it up. It's actually was the winner of the general fiction category of the New Zealand Ockham Book Awards this year.
Yeah.
I've picked it up and read it. I think Diana's better known to us as a journalist and TV reviewer in the New Zealand Listener, but she won the Grimshaw Sargison Fellowship in 2016, and it gave her time to write this book. And so you sort of get the feel that Diana wanted to tell her life story, but was unable to because she needed to find out more about her father. So her father is a Polish Jew who survived the World War II and the Holocaust, but she didn't know this. So she was growing up in Canada with her mother, her New Zealand-born mother, and in the 1960s, her mother and sisters came to live in New Zealand. So there's this sort of quaint New Zealand side to the story. We, you know, a teenage girl arriving in on the North Shore of Auckland in the 1960s. So there's that quaint side to the story. But also very disturbing stories that emerge from that she discovers on her journey, finding out more about her father. Because, of course, he was one of, because they didn't speak about it at home, she just sort of, her father's history was never part of her life. And of course, she, as an adult, has wondered why, you know, these missing parts to her. And so she starts this journey of discovering, finding her father, finding out about his past. And of course, she's gone to some horrible places.
So she actually took the journey,
the
like
way.
You were saying, the ancestral
yes,
journey. She went to Europe, right?
Well, yes. She's very lucky. I was thinking she's very lucky. She had the means and the resources to actually take, to follow up, visit the places where her father grew up and visited along the way to Canada. She's been to... Well, back to Vancouver where she grew up, New York, Warsaw, of course, Berlin. And so it's a really good story, and I really recommend it. She, along the way, tells us about, references all the other books that others have written about the Holocaust and family history. So there's a bit of, you know, referencing if you're interested in following your own family history, but, you know, not in an academic way. I mean, the book's a really good read. So, yeah, I've enjoyed it. What have you got there, Karen?
Well, I was just wondering to myself, as you said, she references other books that have an aspect regarding the Holocaust and family history, because the book, one of my favorite books that grows out of a family history, which I've brought along today, is holding up in this very heavily, a heavy weight here in my right hand, is does relate to the Holocaust and to family history. Did I already say that?
Yeah, but that's all right.
I'll say it twice. It's a wonderful book. It's called The Hare with Amber Eyes. Hare as in H-A-R-E, jumping little animal. The Hare with Amber Eyes, A Hidden Inheritance, written by Edmund de Waal. So Edmund de Waal is a English ceramic artist, and he inherits a collection of 260 or something netsuke from his great uncle Iggy. So do you know what netsuke are?
No.
I didn't know until I'd read the book. So netsuke are little Japanese carvings. I think usually these are ivory in his collection. I'm not sure if they're always ivory. Just little ones that fit in your hand of animals or little persons. And he had this collection that had been given to, he inherited this collection that had been given to great uncle Iggy's parents. So this would be his great, great grandparents, by a cousin of theirs who lived in Paris. So this family was a well-to-do Jewish family with a family seat in Vienna. And Charles, who was the one who came in possession of these netsuke, was an artistic soul who'd gone off to Paris and frequented the Impressionists, in fact, and the art world. He's actually one of the people shown in Renoir's famous painting about the luncheon of the boating party, where they're all sitting in the dappled sunshine under the umbrellas of the little restaurant terrace. And
why, has he been tagged in it or something?
Yeah, it's kind of like being tagged in it. So this this copy of the book that I've got is the illustrated edition that I think came out after the first one that I read. And it's got all the photographs and paintings and so on, and of all the things and places and people mentioned in the book. And it's got the reproduction of the painting as well. So he, meaning back to Edmund, realizes that in thinking about this collection that he's inherited, he realizes how objects are handed on is actually all about storytelling. So I give you this object because I love you, or mm-hmm. because I bought it somewhere special. And he decides he's going to follow the stories behind this inheritance of his. And of course, being in that time period in European history, and being a Jewish family, these stories lead also to the Nazis and to, well, funnily, Uncle Iggy tells him there are many hidden stories, and he thinks that it means stories that the family hides and doesn't want to tell, but actually what it means is stories about hiding, which include things like hiding from the Nazis and also where the Netsukes were hidden when the Nazis took over. Yeah, what do you call it? You know, when they robbed people's houses? So he has this part. He says here, I started the journey. This is about three quarters of the way when he's looking back at where he's gotten so far. And he says, I started the journey with my files of family letters, a sketch map of sorts. More than a year has passed, and I keep finding hidden things. Not just forgotten things, the Gestapo lists and diaries, journals, novels, and poems and press cuttings, the wills and the shipping manifests, the interviews with bankers, the overheard comments in a back room in Paris, and the swatches of cloth for dresses made for turn-of-the-century cousins in Vienna. I am compelled to keep looking. In libraries, I stumble across things that lead onwards, sideways. I am looking to check a fact, the date of the yellow carpet of the winds from Charles's salon, something on the painter of the ceilings in the Palais of Frusi, when I see a footnote and then a note and an appendix. I am winded to find out that Louisa's house in the Rue Bassano, the one opposite Jules and Fanny's house up the street from Charles's last house, all golden stone and curlicues, was used by the Nazis as one of their Paris detention camps. Then, terribly, there is a note in brackets that the girl in the blue dress in Renoir's double portrait of the daughters of Louise Kahn d'Anvers, the commission so endlessly and anxiously fussed over by Charles to raise money for Renoir, had been deported and died in Auschwitz. And then I find that Fanny and Theodore's son Leon and his wife Beatrice and their two children were deported. The family died in Auschwitz in 1944. Here in this house, I am wrong-footed. The survival of the Netsuke in Anna's pocket in her mattress is an affront. I cannot bear for it to slip into symbolism. Why should they have got through this war in a hiding place when so many hidden people did not? I can't make people and places and things fit together anymore. These stories unravel me.
Oh.
Yeah, really powerful, powerful storytelling.
Yeah, and I experienced the same feelings, you know, reading Diana's stories as well. I mean, just very moving, very heartbreaking as well. And it's true that these treasures, so-called treasures, survived and people...
And people don't often.
They're not as valued as these things. So, as my children's book was saying, you know, we are not things.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And this is the terrible things about movements like the Nazi movement that reduce people to objects, take away their humanity. But personally, because you said earlier, you know, the personal effect on you, because I know you had a personal story.
Yes, I do. I have, from my father's side of the family. I think I was thinking about today's show, and I was thinking how rare it is that my father's family actually have a book that they value. It's about their history, and the Bible being an exception. Books are... oral history usually takes precedent over a book. But the book I remember being passed around with the family with the instruction, you have to know this, is Te Rangihiro, Sir Peter Buck's Ethnology of Manahiken Rakanga, which is the islands in the northern coast where Dad was born. And so it's written from material that he gathered on a research trip for the Bishop's Museum, I think, in Hawaii that he worked for at the time. So it's from 1929. And being a New Zealand Māori speaker, of course, he could gather the history and traditions and genealogy of my father's people, islands, prior to the arrival of Christianity, which I think he says happened in 1849. So sadly, my father no longer has his copy. Someone else in the family nabbed it. I know there's one in the Manukau Research Centre, and lucky for me, I have discovered, and for those, you know, for those of us yet to come, it has been digitised. So I can still read about my family history and past, the first inhabitants of Manukau Rakanga and their families, and all the way through to the present day. So it's, well, my father has the link from where Peter Buck's story ends, and today. So it's really a cool book, and it is a treasure for us. So there you go. Do you have something there?
Well, yeah, I'm sure.
Getting all
emotional. Same thing. That's a hard act to follow. That was wonderful. But I do have a personal connection, just in the sense that when you have a really, really beloved author, you feel a personal connection that he doesn't know who I am. And this is Michael Ondaatje, who, interestingly, as I always say, just by coincidence, won the Golden Booker Prize. So this is the one that celebrates 50 years of the Booker Prizes, and he had won the Booker Prize for The English Patient, which was the first book of his that
he
read.
Yes, he was voted.
And he was voted as the best of all the Booker Prize winners of the last 50 years. So good for you, Michael. But the book that I wanted to talk about was his wonderful family memoir, which is called Running in the Family. And this is the story of, so he was actually born in Ceylon. His family, they were English, but they lived in Ceylon. And he's written, the preface is really wonderful. He has this quote from Jane Austen about this woman who lived in a sort of irregular way, in the sense that most people drop romance as they grow older, but this woman actually learned romance as she grew older, and he realized that that was what was happening to him. In his mid-1930s, he says, "I realized that I had slipped past a childhood that I had ignored and not understood." So he decides to go back and look into and tell the family stories. And there's a lot about his father, very eccentric character, but also about his magical grandmother, as everyone's favorite, well, my favorite in the book. And so I don't know if everybody out there has ever read things that Michael Ondaatje has written. He has this wonderful mix always in his best books, not always, but in his best books, of magic and straightforward. And so this is the introduction to his grandmother, Lala. He says, "The Passions of Lala. My grandmother died in the blue arms of a jacaranda tree. She could read thunder. She claimed to have been born outdoors, abruptly, during a picnic, although there's little evidence for this. Her father, who came from a subdued line of Keats, had thrown caution to the winds and married a Dickman. The bloodline was considered eccentric. One Dickman had set herself on fire, and rumors about the family often percolated across Colombo in hushed tones. People who married the Dickmans were afraid." There's no information about Lala growing up. Perhaps she was a shy child, for those who are magical break from silent structures after years of chrysalis. By the time she was 20, she was living in Colombo and tentatively engaged to Shelton de Saram, a very good-looking and utterly selfish man. He desired the good life, and when Frieda Donhorst arrived from England with a thin English varnish and the Donhorst checkbook, he promptly married her. Lala was heartbroken. She went... That's where my page ends. That's where I'll end. She went on to do all the wonderful things he tells in the story. So, so
I love that line about the chrysalis.
Yeah, about breaking out of the chrysalis.
Yeah,
isn't that wonderful? Yeah.
You were saying earlier that that's what he had done. His childhood had passed
away. Yeah,
he was breaking out of his chrysalis. So it repeated.
Yeah.
Family history repeated. Anyway, carry on. Sorry.
I was actually going to ask you a question. I was going to say, so in terms of your own family history, is there something that speaks to you, like this grandmother here? Have you done?
Yeah, well, sadly, on my mother's side, I did try to do some research on through Auckland Library's databases on my mother's side, but it came to a blank. But on my father's side, of course, I think Polynesians, Maori and Pacific, lead the world in genealogy. I mean, you know, just referring back to my father, he can, I'm always in awe of how he can just extract. He's like a, I say, liken him to a walking, living hard drive memory.
Yeah, fantastic.
Computer chip or hard drive. He can just extract connections and people and going back generations, you know, just like that. And I just stand there in awe, you know, I just think, wow, how does he do that?
You
know,
so it's just, you haven't been so tempted to him. You haven't been tempted to do the DNA test to see if it's as good as his memory, to see what comes up?
To prove his memory? No, I haven't. I haven't done it. But I
you were telling to me that you wanted to find out which of the seven sisters you were.
Well, I was thinking of the book, The Seven Sisters of Eve. So you know about this one. Well, actually, we've got the Cook Islands to thank. Excuse me. Yes, this is a good point. We have the Cook Islands to thank for this whole trend of DNA testing. The Seven Sisters of Eve, I think it came out in 2001. The author is Brian Sykes. So he studies mitochondrial genetics. And his studies came up with the fact that, all European women can be sourced back to seven women, and he calls these the clanswomen.
Oh, right, the seven sisters, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how many generations this goes back.
So which one do you want to be yours?
Oh, well, let me read them out to you, and I'll let you choose. But and then he went on to do more research. He's found all the clanswomen of all the continents. So do you want to know them all?
Yes.
Okay, so Ursula, Xenia, Helena, Valda, Tara, Katrine, and Jasmine.
Oh, I'm so disappointed. I thought there were going to be seven famous archetypical women. And I was looking for Lady Godiva, because when my great-grandmother did her family history, she discovered apparently that we are descended from Lady Godiva. Oh. So I thought she might have been one of the seven sisters. Yeah, I haven't actually seen that part of the family tree. I did see another part of it, which was actually laid out, looked very scientific to me, that showed that I'm also descended from William Pynchon, who's the man who wrote the first banned book on the American continent, in the American colonies, as it was at the time. Yeah, I've never done my family history myself, but I do love the old documents.
It would be so interesting. Yours would be so interesting.
Yeah, well, possibly. I've only got a few highlights that have been pointed out to me by other family members. But I do have this wonderful diary. It's not actually a diary. It's my great-grandmother telling her life story. I've got a transcription of it. So she was 76, sitting on her porch, and there was an eclipse of the moon, and she remembered an eclipse of the moon that she'd seen 60 years before as a child, and she decided to write the story of her life. And it's just amazing. She starts out with her first memory, which is actually, believe it or not, Abraham Lincoln's assassination. She was very small. She didn't know who Mr. Lincoln was, but she saw the women. They were living in a log cabin in Iowa, and she saw the women running around the house, getting out their black fancy dresses, you know, the Sunday dresses, and hanging them out the window to act as mourning bunting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know.
What a cool story.
And the amazing thing is she lived to be, until 1962, she lived to be 103, so she basically lived from the Abraham Lincoln's assassination to the Beatles, which is, I find, pretty amazing.
Yeah. You've got good genes.
Yeah, so speaking... we'll see. So that inspired me to go and look at some of the diaries that we have in special collections that we've just digitized recently. We finished digitizing at Auckland Libraries, not I personally. One, for instance, Sir George Grey's notebook, which covers his trip from New York to New Zealand, has been digitized. And a diary, so this is the one I want to talk about, a diary which has been kept by, J.W., I thought I remembered his name, James Williamson, J.W. Fidarb, Esquire, as he was known, which is a diary from March 1839 to May 1852, while in different parts of New Zealand. In particular, the part that I turned to look through was he's living in the Bay of Islands. And so what's funny, you and I looked at this a bit last night, you remember? We kept noticing this. So basically, it's all about three things. So number one, the weather. Number two, what sermon was preached on the Sunday. And number three, what ships arrived and departed.
Yes, yeah, so it was all rather
fleeting clouds and squalls.
Eagle Eyes Karen found something a little bit more interesting.
Yeah. Well, anticipating, thank you. So I was just going to lead up to it by saying, so here's what we lead up to is strong winds and rain, fleeting clouds and squalls, night rain, variable clouds, strong gale, brisk gale. And then all of a sudden I came across this entry I just couldn't believe. And it says, moderate west-southwest and fine. The Waikare, oh, sorry, excuse me, here's the boat that arrived. The Mataa had arrived at Waikare. PM on board Jane, saw JR. 3 p.m. returned Wahapu. Opened case, letters from SWF and EF, both of which brought intelligence of the death of my very dear and beloved mother on 31st of August, 1840, between 11 and 12 p.m., age 69. End of entry.
And that's a,
so yeah. I looked back. So this was actually entered in August 1841. So and his mother died on August 1840. So it took him exactly a year to get the news that from his family that his mother had died. And that's the end of the entry. The next entry is the next day, the 24th.
We go back to the
brisk squalls appearing and cold.
Wow. And one of the diaries that is a little bit more well-known, because Tessa Dudda wrote a book about it about 2 years ago. I haven't read the diaries, but I'm hoping there's something a little bit more interesting in them. So the diaries by Sarah Matthews was printed printed by Professor Rutherford. So he says in his preface, which I've sourced from our databases, they are intensely human documents that Sarah possessed something that was not evident in her husband.
And what was that?
A sense of humor.
Well, I think a sense of humor would have certainly been something that you would have needed in those pioneer days. I remember in my great-grandmother's family history thing, there's a thing where she says nobody, when they later moved to Kansas, and they're living in the plains in Kansas, and she says nobody, my mother's hair turned white. She said nobody knows what the women went through, and that's why so many of them finished in institutions.
Had a different life. Now, just before we move on, I forgot to finish telling my story of how the Cook Islands fits into the trend of DNA testing.
You've got one minute.
So Mr. Brian Sykes was actually on holiday in the Cook Islands and fell off and broke his arm, I think, on a motorbike. And he had all these 6 months to sort of soak up the sun, but he couldn't rest his mind. So we got to thinking about the physical differences he was observing in the people. And this just started the whole ball rolling. He asked for blood samples from locals and the hospital, arranged for them to be analysed and tested in Hawaii, and through the matching of the DNA process, concluded that Polynesians did indeed originate from Asia and not South America, as there was that theory. And from that, now he has we have this whole industry of DNA testing.
Yeah, that is wonderful. That was absolutely worth the minute of time. Cutting into.
I didn't finish telling my story. That's right. People will be wondering what happened to the Cook Islands and all of this. There we go.
I just thought it was implied. I thought it was implied, like, go and do more research if you want to know more. That's which we often, unfortunately, have to do, having only a half an hour. But we did want to say about our databases, didn't we? For instance, our Fano Reunion books and Iwi Histories databases. The Fano Reunion books are a searchable by ancestors' name database, which is really helpful.
Yes, and we, of course, there's our well-known databases, Find My Past, Ancestry.com, and our newest database, My Heritage, which you can also use at home with your library card, of course. So that is that all for our databases today, Karen?
I think we could go on and on and on, but since I see that we've got about 30 seconds, possibly that will have to be all. So we recommend to people they go onto the website and look for them themselves in the family history section. And we also recommend that you check the Auckland Library's blog for the titles of the books that we've talked about today.
And also a list of the databases.
Yes, and you can leave comments and feedback.
It'll be great. So I hope you enjoyed our show today, everyone.
Potential family historians.
Yes.
Out there.
Your journey to discovering who you are and where you came from.
So that's our show for today.
Ka kite ana.
Ka kite ana.
We are say.